Hey, are you hungry? Well, you're in luck. Meat and Three is back for season 16. I'm Taylor Early, and we've got a whole new batch of reporters I am so excited to introduce you to.
Hi, I'm Elizabeth Fisher.
Asha McElroy.
Sam Girardi.
Jessica Gingrich.
Hannah from Wisconsin.
I'm a swing dancing audio engineer.
I am a future registered dietitian nutritionist.
I'm from New York, and I love rice and beans.
My favorite food of all time is a shrimp burrito.
I love watermelon.
We've also got a bonus podcast for you called Behind the Internship. Three of our reporters will take you along to show how they develop stories for this very show, Meat and Three.
Hi, I'm Danielle Flitter, a plant-based chef from Philadelphia, living in Mexico City.
I'm Sophia Hooper. I'm a bartender based in Portland, Maine.
My name is Addison Austin Liu. I am a chef and food journalist from Salt Lake City, Utah, and my favorite food is Peruvian.
Rice and beans.
Hand-drawn noodle soup.
So tune in to enjoy a square meal for your ears. And I hope you saved a little room for dessert.
This episode of Cutting the Curd is brought to you by Comté Cheese Association. Comté, an iconic cheese from the Jura Mountains of France, favored by cheesemongers and cheese lovers all over the world. Find out more at comté-usa.com. That's comté-usa.com.
This episode is brought to you by Square. If you run a restaurant or business, Square has the tools to help you stay connected to customers, shift your business, and navigate this uniquely challenging time. Learn more at square.com/go/curd.
Welcome to Cutting the Curd today on Heritage Radio. I'm your host, Karen Warren, and today on the show, I have Michelle Vieira. She is a writer, illustrator, monger, and a certified cheese professional, and a blogger based out of Columbus, Ohio. In the cheese world, she's probably best known as the Columbus Curd Nerd on Instagram, where she shares stories about the cheese every day. What she started as studying tool for the CCP exam has become her own thing and is now a super educational resource. She's also written articles for Culture Magazine, and she has an illustration background, which we are happy to talk about today on the show. And last but not least, she's also competed in CMI in San Francisco and ended up placing sixth, which I was very happy to watch and see her cut Gruyere in the fastest possible action I could ever see. Michelle, welcome to the Cutting the Curd. How are you today?
Hey, I'm good. Thanks for having me.
Oh, man. You had so many things in your intro. You are a super cheesemonger. My goodness.
Thanks. I when you asked me for that, I just like put everything down. I wasn't sure how to edit necessarily on that.
No, you're amazing. I thought I could read it in one full blow, but I ran out of air and I was like, oh my God, she's so good. I can't even say it all in one breath. That's amazing. Well, thank you for coming out to the show. I'm super excited to have you on Cutting the Curd today. One of the things I'd like to discuss with you is in your most recent Instagram posts, you have been doing these vintage pinup girls. Can you tell me about that? What's the deal with that?
Yeah. So I have an illustration background. And what is great about my blog is I can kind of do whatever I want. And so that includes I can do illustrations, which is a lot of fun.
But how did you get to vintage pinup girls? I mean, that's like, that's a little risque even.
Some of them are it's kind of been a departure from what I've been doing. I've had this book for like 5 or 6 years. It's been in the trunk of my car for like 3 or 4 years. And I pulled it out
just
recently. I have like a ton of art books. And this one is like this compilation art book called The Great American Pinup. And it's compiled by this great art book company called Toshin. But it's just this compilation of all these really beautiful illustrated pinup girls from like the 20s through I think the 60s, of a bunch of different artists. But all different styles, but it's really a wonderful resource. And I've had this idea for a while of incorporating like cheese with like pinup girls, like personally, just like selfishly, because like I'd love a cheese pinup girl tattoo someday.
okay, but so there's a motivation. You've been thinking about a tattoo
a little bit, but also just like I've been interested in this idea, and I was like, oh, you know, we're all quarantined, we're all thirsty, and all kind of have time. Yeah, why not? So
you've had a lot. You right now I've counted you have 12.
And yes, yes. I have one for every day this month.
Oh, that's so, I didn't realize it was a daily drawing. Okay.
It's a daily thing. Yeah. So I think I have like 5 or 6 left to draw right now at this point. So I've just been plugging away at them, but
that's great. And how does it make you feel to get these drawings done and to kind of pair them with the cheeses? How does that feel?
It's been a lot of fun. It's been a really great like challenge. Like, how do I translate a cheese into a style that doesn't necessarily always like incorporate food? And kind of like show cheese in like a different light. And I think it's kind of an interesting time to be doing this as well, because like, you know, cheesemakers are really struggling right now, and all of us as cheese professionals are like, okay, how can we advocate for the makers that we love and for the cheeses that we love so that they don't like go extinct?
Right. So what I'm hearing is this is kind of a relief for you.
It is, yeah. You know, I work in a grocery store setting, so I'm still working. And it's definitely an interesting time to be behind a counter. So in a way, this has kind of been a departure away from that stress as well, that I can, you know, come home and work on something that's kind of silly and fun, but also interesting and kind of like my own weird way of advocating for good cheese.
Absolutely. And how did you, where did your path to becoming a cheesemonger start?
So the summer between my junior and senior year of college, I needed a summer job, and I went to my favorite Jewish deli, which is Katzinger's in Columbus, and they happened to have a spot behind the cheese counter open. And I knew nothing about cheese, and like deli sliced provolone was my favorite cheese.
I love it. Okay, great. I mean, Jewish delis they speak to my inner heart all the time. So,
absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. Like such a special place in my heart.
Mm-hmm.
And
So you were saying, I'm sorry. Yeah.
No, you're fine. So,
We were talking about, you were starting. Yeah, you were starting at the Jewish deli.
Yeah, so I started there, and the first cheese that I like tried that I like absolutely fell in love with was Grayson from Meadow Creek Dairy.
Good choice.
And it was like so fascinating to me that like this cheese like straight up tasted like bacon.
yes.
And yeah, like that just kind of spiraled this never ending fascination and thirst for like wanting to know as much as I can.
I want to talk about that fascination because it shows very well in your Instagram posts. How do you do your research? Because I find that your posts are very informative.
Thank you. So I started my blog when I was starting to kind of prepare for the Certified Cheese Professional exam, which I took last year. And,
congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah. And so for me, when it first started out, it was like a way for me to hold myself accountable for studying. And now it's more, I try to have themes for every month. And I've kind of fallen off a little bit on this, but I try to post every day. And that's another thing of just like wanting to hold myself accountable. You know, have it be something that's consistent. But yeah, so
But so you research it and you go to what kind of books, or is it online that you do your research?
So as far as books and stuff go, the Oxford Companion to Cheese is like my biggest resource. I use that for like most, probably about like 75 to 80% of my content is like straight from the Oxford.
Wow. Okay. Good to know.
Which, when I studied for the CCP exam, I read it cover to cover.
Wow.
I recommend reading it cover to cover if you're considering taking the exam. Take the extra time to read it. It's really interesting.
I actually do not own a copy. It's on an Amazon wish list.
It's so worth it.
I need to do that. I have a lot of other cheese books, but that one has yet to enter the collection. But anyway, continue.
It is seriously like the holy grail of cheese books. It really is.
Wow. Big praise. Okay. I like it. Very cool.
It really is, though. I mean,
yeah. Oh, sorry. Yeah. You were going.
Yeah. About like 75 to 80% of my content is like sourced from the Oxford. I also love Liz Thorpe's Book of Cheese. I use that too. I love the way that she writes and how approachable she is and how she writes.
She's much more approachable than the Oxford is more of it's probably like a reference book dictionary style. Am I right?
It's like an encyclopedia. Okay. But what's great about it is, you know, it's short little excerpts, so you can kind of stop at any point, which is kind of nice when you're reading it. And you're constantly reading about different subjects in like small packages as you're reading it. So you
get the references, and then let's say for the pinup girls, you have I don't know, Katya Cavallo, let's say, which is one of my favorites that you have there. It sort of has a double entendre going on. Can you kind of describe to us what you drew for that?
Yeah, so for that one, the Cacio Cavallo means horse cheese, so it's not because it's
like
made
horse
from horse
balls,
milk,
right?
It's like tied off like a horse like saddle bag. And so the way that I approached that one was the pinup girls like riding the Cacio Cavallo, kind of like a bucking horse.
I think it's hilarious. I think it's the double entendre there is fantastic. I really,
thank you.
Yeah. I think what I like about your work in the last 12 pinup girls that I've seen is there's always like a clever, sort of funny value, comic value to it. Is it, you were intending that? I expect.
Yeah.
Is that your intention?
Yeah. I always tend to err on like a little bit of a side of like sense of humor with my work. And it's been kind of a relief to kind of get back into that because it's been a while since I've been able to really do that.
And it's so important in this time as well.
Yeah. Like, I feel like right now it's like, it's kind of an important time to be doing something like this because it's like, I feel like all of us are kind of going through different levels and different like ways of processing trauma with all of this. And so finding ways to laugh and like find something that is, you know, humorous but also like smart is, I think, important for all of us right now.
I completely agree. I mean, we're all a little bit fragile. I guess what I would want to ask you then is the feelings of these women. What do you think some of these women are saying or trying to convey in these photos? Can you speak to one of them that you know, like Stilton seems kind of like a shy woman to me.
Yeah. I feel like a lot of them like all kind of have different personalities too. Like, pulling some up right now. So for going off the ones that I've posted already, the Harbison's like one of my favorites, like as like of the ones that I've posted so far, it's like one of my favorites.
Describe to the listeners, what she is doing and looking like.
Interesting story about that one. That one's a direct reference to a pinup that I found in this book. I posted it the day that I posted it on my story. I don't remember what his name is. I'll find it later. But
that's okay. No worries.
Yeah, no worries.
Yeah, we'll think of it later. We'll come back to it.
No, it's fine. But That one's a direct reference to an existing pinup illustration from the 40s. Where this woman is like riding this like pool toy, like seal looking thing. And so I took that and translated it for the Harbison. And I've been interested in doing like people of color as well. Cause like, you know, it's no secret that like classic pinup girls are like overwhelmingly white. And so I've been trying to incorporate like some diversity as well.
I noticed that in the Barada pinup and the Oaxaca pinup. I thought, well, the Barada was the most risque to me, honestly.
I think that was the most risque of all of them.
I like looked at it and I was like, wait, did she really draw this?
I love her.
I guess I'll try to describe it, or you should describe it. So, it's better if you describe it.
Debrata, she's like having fun in the sun, like on the beach, and like, you know, the broad is just like chilling between her legs, and it's like split.
Yeah, she's a spread-legged woman.
Yeah.
Who has like
She's just having a good time.
Yeah, I definitely, I'm not even sure. I'm kind of blushing as we're talking about this. It's a little, it's like right over the line of PG-13.
It's like totally towing the line. That was like, I think probably the closest to towing the line of all of them.
Yeah, I was like, I don't know what I can say on Heritage Radio, but I hope we can talk about this, which is fine.
Yeah,
we
totally.
We're doing it. Chill. It's happening now.
Yeah, it's chill.
I love that one. I mean, I love all of them. I mean, even the other one that I thought, Tetia, which I think is like almost the go-to.
The Tetia,
yeah. If you hear pinup girls and you're a cheesemonger and you hear, I mean, I knew guys that made Tetia jokes all day at the shop.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But I mean,
that one's like a no-brainer. It's like, of course I'm including Tetia.
But I love that you gave the reference to Madonna in there, the pop artist.
With like the cone bra, like,
yeah, I just thought, oh, that's so fun, that's so good. I love how that's happening, and you've brought in like pop culture reference and your love of art, and then you know, every cheese love all into the one. And I think that's it's really, really cool. I'm hoping is that you set up a calendar one day for this.
First time I've heard that. I'm trying to figure out the logistics of that. I'd love to make it like a 2021 calendar of like the top 12.
I will be your first customer. I will definitely buy that. I think it's super cool. So, and are you selling your artwork nowadays? Can people access your artwork?
I am, but it's like not super official. I want to invest in a good printer, because I want to like have the. I could just go to Kinko's and just get it printed,
right on.
But there's something about like printing it myself that I'm interested in doing. Plus it's not quite as expensive as like $10.
Yeah, you should be practical about this. And it's your artwork. Yeah. You want it to be high quality. Yeah. So
I am, but it's like not the most official right now. I want to like build a site where like prints.
No, it's important. That's important.
I haven't gotten around to it yet, but it is a goal of mine to do that.
No, that's good. Yeah. It's a next step.
Yeah, that's the way I see it too.
I'm curious then, we've dived a little bit into your cheese background, but when did you start becoming an artist? Were you always drawing as a child or illustrating as a child?
Yeah, I was like a weird kid and I was always drawing. Like my mom would like get the like biggest possible, thickest, like bound sketchbook that was available, that was like 600 pages, and I just like fill it cover to cover because I was like just constantly drawing.
So you're one of those artists that just draws all the time.
Yeah, I draw all the time. Like I've been keeping a sketchbook since I was 5, and you know,
that's kind of a nice relief to have that. I would say like an outlet for that.
Yeah, yeah. And it's been something that's kind of ebbed and flowed, like, over the years. Like, you know, I was super, super creative and stuff, like, from childhood through college even. And, like, I went to Ohio State. I have an art degree in painting and drawing. And after I graduated, it was like I was starting my cheese career, and my creativity kind of like fell off for a while. And like I try to make work, and it would be like I just hated everything I made, and like nothing felt inspiring, and there was a serious like dry spell for a while.
I hear some frustration in your voice about that.
Yeah, I mean, it happens. Like, it's one of those things that, like, you know, art doesn't really exist. It kind of going back to, like, where you were saying, like, about, like, mentioning, like, pop culture references or all of that. Like, I believe that, like, art doesn't really exist in a vacuum. Like, everything is kind of interconnected. And so, for me, like, work that is important to me is like stuff that is relevant. Like, it's not just like art for art's sake is good, and it's important in its own way, but it's also like I like things that are that feel relevant, that feel like they're it's more than just like this is a picture of a flower for the sake of it's just a flower and there's nothing there.
Yeah, and it's a purpose. You need purpose behind it.
Yeah, and that's just me. Like, it, you know, there's totally validity in that. But for me personally, I'm a little bit more, I'm more interested in, like, what can I do with this as a medium that's, like, a gleaning a little bit more light on something that might be more simple. At first, I guess.
Yeah, sort of like cheese. It all kind of gets connected in a weird way.
Yeah, totally. All the natural... Cheese is art. Like, I mean, it's totally the same thing. You're taking something that might seem simple at first. You're making it something really expressive and interesting and thought-provoking. It's the same thing.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. It's simply as simple as that. I mean, and I don't think you can ever draw the same thing twice, even. I don't think you can make the same cheese twice.
Totally agree with that.
Trying a new thing each time, and your mind's clicking away, and you go into this, like, zenned out, and you sort of come up with new ideas in these times, I feel like.
Totally.
So I applaud you for this, and to mix, again, your nature of art with the cheese, the love of cheese, I think you're hitting something that's really perfect for you right now. So that's super cool. What was your favorite class when you were doing sort of maybe you don't have one. I don't know. Was there an art class?
Like when I was in school?
Yeah, while you were in school. What was your favorite? Oh, man. Did you have a favorite?
One that was the most unique for me that was really interesting was I took a like a bookbinding class where like I learned how to like make my own books, which was kind of cool.
Oh wow! Like where you sewed binding?
Wow. Like I like sewed books together and like created my own sketchbooks for a while.
Wow.
Was pretty cool. That was a pretty cool class.
Did you ever do like printmaking?
A little bit. I didn't end up taking printmaking classes. I took other electives.
I see. Well, the reason why I bring it up is it within your work, especially the recent work, I feel like it's blocked. I mean, I'm actually not even sure. I wanted to ask you about this. When you're doing composing the art for Instagram, what sort of medium is that? I don't even know what to call that. Yeah.
What I usually do now, and it's mostly because I suck at photography, is I use a program on my iPad called Procreate, which is one of the most intuitive digital programs I've ever used. And what's great about it is the brushes that you use are very, like, they read a little bit more traditional. Like, you can use different, like, what I do is, like, I use multiple different layers. So I start with, like, a sketching layer, and it's, like, a pencil. So it looks like a colored pencil. When I'm using color, I use the airbrushing tools, so they're a little bit softer.
I like the texture you give to your work as well. There's like patterns in it that I think is really nicely done. Like on the Stilton Girl, on the dress, you had like a really cool pattern that I thought, that's a nice touch to that, you know?
Thank you. it was fun.
How do you make those choices? You just kind of look at it and you're like, I think this would look pretty.
It's a little bit of that. It's also a little bit of, like, I use a lot of reference photos as well. Like, I don't really like Pinterest for much, but I do love it for reference photos.
Interesting. Okay.
So, like, for the Stilton one, I like, searched, like, tea party dress or something and, like, used that as a reference for...
Very cool. I like that because then there you have again more homage to the history of these things, and you're kind of combining cheese history and the art history.
I usually have like multiple different references for most of them.
You should do like a luncheon on the grass, like Columbus Curgard style, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm just, you know, doing my thing where I'm like, oh, that would be neat if she could do that. But I don't know.
Totally.
All right. Michelle, I'm just going to take a quick break. We'll come right back and continue this interview. Just hang on tight. All right, listeners, fabulous. I'm interviewing Michelle Vieira, and this is Cutting the Curd.
This episode of Cutting the Curd is brought to you by Conte Cheese Association. Conte Cheese Association represents the Conte PDO, Conte Protected Designation of Origin, in the USA. Conte is a raw milk cooked pressed cheese from the Jura Mountains of France. There, every day, 2,500 family farms deliver milk to over 150 local cheesemaking facilities, or fruitiers. This milk must be transformed into Conte within 24 hours of milking to preserve the lactic microflora in the milk, ensuring the cheese's aromatic potential. About 105 gallons of milk are required to craft a single wheel of Conte. Conte takes time to acquire its flavors in the affinage cellars. After 8 months of aging by dedicated affineur on average, each wheel of Conte is graded and shipped to market. No wheel of Conte is the same. Its flavors speak to the pastures where the cows grazed, the season in which it was made, the particular craftsmanship of the cheesemaker, and the time spent in the aging cellar. Therefore, every wheel of Conte is unique. Learn more about Conte, an iconic cheese from the Jura Mountains of France, favored by cheesemongers and cheese lovers all over the world. Find out more at conte-usa.com. That's conte-usa.com.
This episode is brought to you by Square. We all know that this is an incredibly challenging time for our friends running restaurants and small food businesses. With social distancing in place, people are staying home and eating in, and restaurants have had to pivot to pickup and delivery only. HRN would usually be recording our podcast from our studio inside Roberta's. But since they've had to close their dining room, they've ramped up their frozen pizza production, set up a wine and grocery shop, and seen their delivery orders skyrocket. Like Roberta's, many restaurants have been changing offerings day by day as they figure out how to best serve their customers. If you run a restaurant or a small business, Square has the tools to help you adapt. One of these tools is the Square Online Store. It lets you set up a free online ordering page with curbside pickup and local delivery, so you can keep customers safe. You can deliver orders yourself or integrate with delivery partners. Its order hub lets you manage all your incoming orders in one place, no matter which delivery partners you choose to use. Square has all the tools to help you stay connected to customers no matter where they are. See everything that's available by visiting square.com/go/curd.
All right. Welcome back to Cutting the Curd. I'm your host, Kara Warren. My guest today is Michelle Vieira, a.k.a. the Columbus Curd Nerd. You can find her work on Instagram, and we are discussing her pinup girls to art history to CCP exam to everything.
All over the place.
Cheese. Yeah, right? Everything. I mean, you're a Renaissance woman, I would say.
I just love to learn it. It's just about all different kinds of things.
Yeah, I mean, I love it. I think it's wonderful. Are you using your art as a cheesemonger every day? Do you do signage work, or are you?
I don't really at work. You know, where I work is a little bit more corporate, so I don't really at work, but I definitely like apply creative thinking and creative problem solving, which I feel like is related.
Yeah, absolutely. I think as a cheesemonger, you need that for day-to-day interaction. I mean, when you're setting the case.
Yeah, and especially as a buyer, too. It's like a lot of creative problem solving with, like, merchandising. And, like, what am I going to do with this that got allocated?
Yeah. Right, right. And then how can I cut this to look beautiful in, like, a sculpture?
Yeah.
I always found it was one of the most relaxing or most obsessive fun things I could do in my day as a cheesemonger was to make the case look perfect. So I'm sure your case looks beautiful. I mean, you know, you do all types of tricks, I'm sure. I don't know. How do you set your cheese case? Is it like a...
I feel like it's just an evolving monster that I tame once in a while.
A monster, my goodness. Well, you've heard it first from Columbus Kirdner, a monster of cheesecake,
ever evolving monster.
But
you
what
know,
are you, yeah. Oh, sorry, you first.
No, you're fine.
No, you were gonna say something. You go first. What were you gonna say?
So I say that just because, like, with the setting that I'm in, you know, I work in a major grocery store, so it's more of a grab and go kind of thing. So it's a lot of how can I make this designed to be accessible? You know, because a lot of my job right now is, you know, directing Amazon shoppers. Where's the Parmigiano Reggiano? Like, where's the
is that the big summer? Yeah, is that the? I was going to ask you, what are the big sellers for you right now? Since times have changed, what kind of cheese?
Yeah, it's a lot of like what's familiar right now. So like Parmigiano Reggiano is number one, definitely king right now. Other like cooking cheeses like Gruyere does really well right now. People have been buying quite a bit of Brie, especially this past weekend with Mother's Day.
So I'm hearing a lot of comfort cheese is being bought.
It's a lot of like comfort and familiarity, which I think, you know, right now it's a lot is just really uncertain right now. So having something that people know has been kind of like a source of comfort right now.
Do you think of yourself as a cheese therapist?
A little bit. I definitely think of cheese as therapy.
Yeah. I mean, because I sometimes feel like when a customer would come to the counter, you really could like connect with a person over the cheese.
Yeah.
So I wonder for you, is that happening?
I think that's a really, really interesting way of putting it. You know, I think that it is definitely something that, especially right now, it's something that like people are kind of turning to as something that's comfortable and familiar. So it is kind of its own form of self-care. I haven't thought of myself as a therapist, but I really like that analogy.
I'm glad. So. I'm glad that's this is what the Cutting the Curd is about here. I think so. In terms of now your art, you're doing more pinup girls
right
for
now,
the rest of the month.
Right now.
right now, at this moment.
Oh my God. Are you a multitasker, Michelle? Is that what you're telling me?
I'm definitely scatterbrained. Yeah, a little bit.
That's the trait of a very good cheesemonger, because you have to go through 200 cheeses sometimes at a, you know. I want to ask you, what is it like to be Columbus curd nerd? Are you getting recognized at cheese events?
Yeah, it's kind of weird. So as I've kind of gained notoriety on Instagram, like the more cheese events I go to, the more people know who I am, which is kind of crazy.
Well, how does that feel, though? I mean, that must be...
It's awesome, but it's weird.
It is funny when that can happen. I think it must be... It's a community, right? It's another community.
That's how I see it. You know, it's... one thing that's really beautiful about this industry is people are really in it together and really communal and open and helpful. And I've made some really great friends through this blog, through people that follow me. It's definitely interesting, because it's like there's a lot of people that I know really well through my blog, but like I haven't met in person yet. And like, so it's kind of an interesting thing. Like it's, or like I'll meet people at events such as ACS or CMI, and you know, I'll have known them for a while, and you know, this is the first time we've actually like met in person.
It's very funny how that can happen. Is there someone that the cheese community would know that you know online only, but are thinking you hope to meet one day?
There's quite a few. One of them is Angela Fan out of Vancouver. Her Instagram is called Cheese Darling. She's a really great advocate for British Columbian cheeses, and I've learned a lot from her just about Canadian cheese in general. She's one that I'd love to meet. Another one that I'd love to meet is Rachel Lucas, too, who's out of Washington State. I haven't met her yet in person, but she's been a huge advocate and a huge fan of what I've been doing, and we talk all the time. There's a lot of people that like I've met through Instagram that I haven't met yet in person, but I feel like I know pretty well.
That's very cool. And how long have you had the Instagram account Columbus Curd Nerd?
So I started it on New Year's Day of 2018. So I'm about 2.5 years in.
Yeah. And I would say how steady is your following growing? Do you see like an increase?
Yeah. I mean, it's steadily growing. I think it's like just under 2,500 followers. Which is kind of crazy to think about, but
do you have a expectation for it?
I mean, not necessarily. Like, as far as like how well a post does, like usually if it has over 50 likes, I'm like, okay, that was a good post. Like if it was less than that, usually I'm like, okay, it was kind of a dud. That's okay. And you never really know until like you post it. But
when you post, you're posting still mainly, are you posting for yourself or are you posting for an audience?
It's more for, I don't know. It's a little bit of both. Like, I think I do it for myself. I don't do it because of other people's expectations. But I also do it for other people, in that it's like sharing kind of like with cheesemongering. It's sharing passion and, you know, hopefully someone else gets something out of it.
Yeah. I mean, I think,
I love the humor of it, especially, yeah. Again, I know I keep talking about it, but with everything now, it's such a cool relief to see. Like, I know the other day you had Mumolette and the Marlene Dietrich, her sitting on that. And I was like, that's so effing cool. Like, I would have never been able to think of that. Like, and she's smoking a cigarette and looking super, like, sexy cool. Like,
yeah.
I like that you did that. And I think I saw someone commented, maybe it was the Lucas person you mentioned, about the cigarette smoking even. Like, that was so you've chosen to, like, so they're risque, they're smoking cigarettes. Do they have, are they drinking anything alcoholic yet? I don't know if I've noticed that.
There's one coming up for Drunken Goat. And ooh, she's kind of inspired by, like, the Greek god Bacchus. So she's, like, drinking some wine.
Cool.
But
I'm excited to see that. That sounds fun.
Yeah, that one's upcoming. That one's this week. That's coming up.
So how far out do you work in terms of the amount of artwork that you have?
So I am on the 24th right now, I think. As far as like working on content goes, I think I'm on the 24th. I like to have a kind of healthy amount ahead of time, ahead of me, just because, you know, I don't work on stuff every single day. And if I feel like it's coming up too close, I get like really stressed out about it.
Of course, yeah.
So, well, I found for me, if I work ahead, it's better all around for everyone.
Well, and you're doing it really just for yourself. Like, there's no money involved in this. This is just passion for you. It's your art and your love of cheese mixing together to do this cool thing. Have you met other artists that choose cheese as their subject? Have you met anyone else like that?
I know Mike Gino. He's kind of the only other one I know of that's like specifically art with cheese.
So it's a very intimate club. It's you and Mike Gino at this moment.
It's pretty much just me and Mike. Yeah.
You can hold it down at the art fair.
Pretty much.
Oh my goodness. And I wonder if you can instill, are there other new younger cheesemongers that you're inspiring? Have you talked to anyone about more art and cheese?
Not necessarily about art and cheese. I mean, I think as far as like mongers that are like younger in the game that I'm a huge fan of, I really love Emma Harvey's work. Her Instagram handle's Bored in Vermont. She's out of Daedalus. But she does some really beautiful cheese boards. One girl that I met from CMI, Sarah Beth, she's based out of Grand Rapids, Michigan. Her Instagram's that one cheesemonger. I love her. I love what she's been doing too. She's actually doing a really cool thing right now, where she's like kind of blown up overnight, where she has been making this series called Apocalyptic Cooking on Facebook. Okay, so it's called Apocalyptic Cooking. If you search it on Facebook, she's got a page for it. But she's been posting kind of like how you were saying about like just like a little bit of humor. Like, she's been designing like just these really beautiful photographs. Like, it's like a head of broccoli, for example. And then she'll have like a list of like things you can do with that broccoli. That's just like really, it's really straightforward, but it's also just like funny. But she's blown up overnight. She got like hundreds of thousands of followers on Facebook like overnight.
No way.
On this page. Yeah, it's insane. And she, but she's been running with it. Like, she's made a couple like mini like cookbook zines from it already, and she's just like really been taking this time to make something really cool out of it.
Would you do a graphic novel or a zine at some point, you think?
Maybe. I don't know. I've designed for the upcoming, so Madison Trapkin, who's the editor-in-chief at Culture, she's got a zine called Girl Squash. I've done a couple illustrations for them for the upcoming one. But yeah, I don't know. I haven't really gotten around to that yet.
No, listen, you don't need more on your list to do, but I just like to know.
Never say never, who knows?
Yeah, no, never say never. And then in terms of the Curd Nerd game, or, you know, in Ohio, what's happening in the cheese scene in Ohio? I don't think I know very much about Ohio's cheese scene.
So, there are a lot of really fabulous Ohio makers. A lot of them aren't really available outside of Ohio right now.
Oh, darn. Okay. Yeah.
There's a couple, but not really that much. One of my favorites is Canal Junction up in Defiance, Ohio. They're best known for their washed rind cheese called Charlot, which is like, all of their cheeses are raw milk and farmstead and grass-fed. And what's really cool about their cheeses is, like, theirs were the first that really, like, illustrated, like, how grass, like, totally changes the milk, like, from batch to batch. Like, Charlot will be wildly different from, like, one batch to another batch.
Sounds good.
That's one of my favorites. As far as Columbus goes specifically, there's a shop and cheesemaker called Black Radish. I'm friends with the owners. They're really fabulous, but they're really doing some cool stuff as well, where John and Ann, who are the owners, they're making their own cheeses. They also make some really fabulous preserves. And then they have a cheese shop in our public market called the North Market, and they have their own stand where they have their cheeses, but also some other cheeses that are kind of in line with where they stand on, like, really good cheeses. And they've been trying to, like, bring in stuff that, you know, bigger competitors such as, like, Murray's or Kroger just, like, don't have.
Yeah, that's smart.
Murray's or Whole Foods. I mean, Murray's and Kroger are one and the same. But
it's okay. I knew what you meant.
Yeah.
You know what I wanted to ask you? I love playing this game now, since we're all living in our spaces at home. What the segment is? What's in your fridge? So what's in your fridge, cheese wise? Do you have, like,
entirely too many cheeses?
Oh, always. Yeah.
Currently, I've got some Shelburne Farms, where I've worked through the smoked cheddar and the six-month cheddar that I got. I'm still working through the cloth-bound cheddar, which I made adult Lunchable of that with some summer sausage for lunch this morning.
I love the Shelburne Farms cheddar. Shout out to Tom Perry.
God, it's so good.
Yeah.
So good.
Was there a year that you preferred over, you know, like, the, was it 2 year?
I love the younger ones. I honestly, yeah. Oh, like, wow. I love the 6 month.
Cool.
Like, I know the 2 year is, like, way more popular, but, like, the 6 month is just, like, so buttery and just so lovely. There's nothing to hate about it.
Okay. So you have the Shelburne cheddars and you prefer
the 6 month?
Yeah, I got
the Shelburne cheddars. I've got, got a tiny hunk of Parmigiano Reggiano. I still have some cheeses from Arethusa I'm, like, still working through that I got, like, a couple months ago. But they're Informaticum paper. Like, they're fine. I've just been, like, slowly working through them.
It's a very serious thing you just said. You're like, I have the paper on it. They're not going to die.
It's fine. Like,
they're not going to dry out.
They're fine. Shout out to Formaticum and Ovaltine. Like, yeah.
I mean, if you have the paper in your house, it is helpful. So
that's all I use at home. but yeah, so I've got entirely a lot of that. They sent me like 20 pounds of cheese. Like
that's a lot
at the beginning of all of this, and so I've just been slowly working through it.
Oh my goodness, I love it.
But yeah, and then I've got a trade going with Emma Harvey, who I mentioned earlier, who bored in Vermont. We're going to be doing a collaboration. That's like Cheesemonger Invitational style, like Perfect Bites. So I'm sending her some Ohio cheese. She's sending me some Vermont cheese. And then we're going to play around with them. So.
I really like that idea. That's cool. Will you guys Instagram live it, or is it like something more? Yeah, I think
we're going to Instagram live it and probably like make like subsequent posts after the fact.
Oh, cool.
So it's a little bit more permanent, but
yeah, I'll have to look out for that. I was going to ask you, what kind of cool pairings have you been doing?
I just got Milk Bar has released like prepackaged cookies at Whole Foods. And so on my way out earlier this week, I was like, okay, they're here finally. I need to get some. So
what kind of cookie is it?
So they have a couple. I got the cornflake marshmallow chocolate chip one. And then I also got the compost cookies, which I really want to try those compost cookies with some Bailey Hazen. Because they've got like coffee and chocolate and pretzels and stuff on them.
That could be really cool.
Awesome Bailey Hazen.
You're making me hungry right now, dude.
Oh, that's what I'm here for. I feel like I always make everyone hungry.
That means you're very good at what you do. Oh my God.
Just constantly talking about food.
So, okay, so you're going to buy Milk Bar cookies, and then you're going to eat it with Bailey Hazen cheese.
That's what I really want to do. Okay. I need to get my hands on some Bailey Hazen.
Oh, my God. I feel like I need to have Caitlin O'Neill on. You know Caitlin O'Neill? I feel like now I need her to start talking, because I was looking at Instagram, and you guys were jiving on some, was it smoked goose, smoked honey? And I was like, oh my God.
I want to try that.
I would try it yesterday or the day before. I was like, I gotta get whatever this is. I mean, it's just funny. Yeah. Anyway, I'm sorry. I'm on a tangent about pairing. We're on the radio. This is Cutting the Curd, everyone. Dear listener, this is Cutting the Curd.
We're just chilling.
No, just tangents. Well, I want to thank you again, Michelle. Thank you for coming on the show today and sharing your artwork and I hope it continues. And I'm looking forward to your next work. You know, I could talk all day with you about pairings, cheese, and art. Yeah. So,
yeah, that's another episode.
Just keep going on to different tangents and hosting different programs and Renaissance cheesewoman that you are. So thank you again for coming on the show.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. This is a huge honor. I really super appreciate it.
Oh, yay. Cool. So let me just tell the audience again, you are on Instagram at Columbus Curd Nerd.
Yep. All one word.
Exactly. And this is Cutting the Curd. You can find me at Kara Warren. And this is Heritage Radio Network. All right. Thanks, everyone. And have a great evening and eat more cheese. Yeah. Cheers.
Eat good cheese.
Bye.
Cutting the Curd is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
I want to tell you about a new podcast called Amuse News. Publishing multiple days a week, Amuse News is your source for food news, interviews from around the food world, and more. On the show, we'll be engaging with food storytellers, from chefs to advocates to people working in the field, and many more. Find Amuse News wherever you get your podcasts, Amuse News is a destination for everyone who's looking for a new, insightful look into the world of food.